And thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. Two key committees advance Mayor Johnson's budget proposal. Our Spotlight Politics team on what's in it and what comes next. And a new book explores the transformative reign of Chicago's longest-serving mayor. And now to some of today's top stories. Mayor Brandon Johnson's budget proposal is set for a final vote. That's after two key city council committees narrowly approved Johnson's $17.3 billion spending plan. The proposal hikes property taxes by $68 million while increasing a host of other taxes and fees by an additional $165 million. The full city council will now be able to vote on the plan. That two-step process is set to start Wednesday with a final vote scheduled for Friday. Our Spotlight Politics team will have more on today's high-drama votes coming up. Senator Dick Durbin is calling on President Joe Biden to take steps to protect immigrant families before President-elect Donald Trump takes office.
Now, President-elect Trump has pledged that on the first day of his new administration, he will declare a national emergency and use our military as part of a mass deportation plan. I've made a living out of politics, as have my colleagues at the table here. During the course of the campaign, you can make promises. Sometimes they come true and sometimes they don't.
Thank you, Chairman. Durbin spoke at a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing, which he chairs on the issue today, about concerns that mass deportations would separate families and harm the economy. It comes a day after Trump's border chief, Tom Homan, visited Chicago, saying the city will be ground zero for mass deportations. Durbin and other senators have sent a letter to President Biden asking him to speed up processing DACA applications for Dreamers, as well as processing asylum claims, and to designate and extend temporary protected status for all eligible countries. But during today's hearing, Senator Lindsey Graham argues the only way to control the border is to prioritize deportations. A federal judge is blocking what would have been the largest supermarket merger in history. The nearly $25 billion proposal would have merged grocery giants Albertsons, which owns Jewel Osco, and Kroger, which owns Mariano's. But the judge ruled the merger would have limited competition and harmed consumers and workers. The companies had argued a merger would help them better compete with Walmart, Costco, and Amazon. Baseball great Ryan Sandberg says his cancer has returned and has spread. The Cubs Hall of Fame second baseman made the announcement on social media today, sharing the cancer has relapsed and spread to other organs. Sandberg says he's resuming intensive treatment, and he thanks fans for their thoughts and prayers. Sandberg first shared his prostate cancer diagnosis in January, but then said he was cancer-free in August after chemo and radiation treatments. He was the National League MVP in 1984 and a 10-time All-Star during 15 seasons with the Cubs. Cubs chairman Tom Ricketts called him an inspiration to cancer survivors everywhere. Up next, pressure over the city budget, a state Supreme Court ruling on cannabis, and claims of police racial profiling. What's not to talk about with our Spotlight Politics team? That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Pressure is mounting on Mayor Brandon Johnson as the city faces an end-of-year budget deadline. And as the mayor's hand-picked school board prepares for its last meeting before a partially elected board takes over, a growing chorus of principals and alderpeople are urging it not to dismiss school CEO Pedro Martinez. Plus, President-elect Donald Trump's border chief promises mass deportations at a Northwest Side Republican holiday party. Here with all that and more is our Spotlight Politics team, Amanda Vinicky, Heather Sharone, and Nick Blumberg. Welcome back, gang. So, deadline to pass the city budget keeps getting closer because time marches on, Heather, but it looks like the third time might be a charm. What happened today at City Hall?
Well, the City Council's Finance Committee advanced the part of the budget that taxes Chicagoans to pay for the budget on a vote of 14 to 12. And the City Council's Budget Committee agreed to spend that money on a vote of 17 to 16. So we are talking incredibly small margins and a lot of controversy over exactly what this budget would do, which, as you said, would tax Chicagoans to the tune of $234 million more. If this is approved on Friday, it will mean that it will be more expensive to sign up for Netflix or any other streaming service. Your property tax will go up. If you own a property worth $250,000, you'll pay about $50 more a year, and it's going to be just a whole bunch of other taxes that filled the city's budget gap, which started at $982 million. But will there be 26 votes to pass this package? Today's margins tell us if there is, it's going to be incredibly, incredibly close.
Well, to that point, Heather, what does that narrow margin mean? Like, what can we expect on Friday?
Well, I would imagine that the mayor's staff are frantically making calls to make sure that they have the votes, that they think they have the votes, and if they aren't, I sure suggest that they do that.
Perhaps you want to whip the
hot tip, folks.
Yeah. If we all want to be done with this on Friday rather than this stretching into the week before Christmas and then potentially to New Year's, you know, there may be some horse trading going on behind the scenes. We saw some allegations of that today at City Council. A couple committees saw their budgets suddenly increase and then decreased when the spotlight shone on them. That is a time-honored way of sort of making sure that your friends and allies stay with you. But, you know, it's not clear sort of what else the city has to give, because if there was more money left to sort of make this an easier vote, it would have been spent weeks ago.
The mayor's handpicked school board, they are also scheduled to have their last meeting before the hybrid board takes over. Of course, half of that board was recently elected. Nick, what is the latest in the power struggle, though, between the mayor and the school's chief, Pedro Martinez?
Well, the latest thing we were looking for is the agenda of that board meeting. As you mentioned, just 2 days away, they had to put out their agenda by today at 5 o'clock. There does not appear to be any specific item on the board's agenda relating to the tenure of CEO Pedro Martinez. Nothing on there talking about potentially dismissing him. As you mentioned, you know, just yesterday we saw 21 alder people send a letter to the current board urging them not to make any big changes, like, oh, I don't know, firing the CEO before this hybrid board takes over next month. We've seen, you know, Alderman Gil Villegas, you know, come out and, you know, praise Martinez's support during a really, his tenure rather, during a really tumultuous time. But there's always the possibility of, say, an emergency meeting that the board calls. It is not necessarily, you know, that Martinez is out of the woods yet, but as of this last meeting that we have scheduled, doesn't appear to be anything that puts his leadership at risk.
Okay, so let's turn to a ruling by the Illinois Supreme Court that some might refer to as reefer madness, Amanda. It has to do with cannabis and car searches. Fill us in.
Yeah, so I think this might be perhaps a little confusing for folks. So just to spell it out, you had a decision issued back in September that said that the smell of burnt cannabis was not reason for police to be able to search your car without a warrant. Now this new decision just out says that raw cannabis smell, police can. And the justices say that there's a difference, that basically if you smell pot that is burnt, then it means that it was already done or currently being smoked, which they would be fairly obvious to an officer, right? Like if you see somebody. Versus they say that raw cannabis, because the law says it has to be in an odor-proof container, you're automatically breaking the law if you can smell raw cannabis. Now, there was a dissent. One of the justices wrote that this is absurd and defies logic and said that that's, in fact, not the case, that you might smell raw cannabis, not just because it is clearly a violation of the law and not in a car in an odor-proof container, but maybe it's just the smell that's on somebody because, say, they work in a dispensary or they help to grow marijuana. But it is the latest ruling, and that is the case. So if you are going to have marijuana with you in your car, keep it in the container if you don't want to get in trouble for breaking the law.
Keep that locked up. And, Amanda, of course, you did explain this for our viewers. Folks can find that online.
Oh, yes, they can. WTTW News.
Okay.
You can read the whole kit and caboodle.
Okay. So getting pulled over, though, this is something that Anthony Driver, he is, of course, the head of the Community Commission for Public Safety and Accountability in Chicago. That is the civilian police oversight agency. Heather, he's familiar with getting pulled over. What did he tell you?
So in the last 11 months, he's been pulled over 5 times by Chicago police officers. And this is, I think, especially startling because he not only is the head of that police oversight board, he is in the process of crafting new rules that could limit the police department's ability to make these kind of stops. Now, we did, of course, reach out to the police department. They declined to comment on specific traffic stops on specific people. But Superintendent Larry Snelling has said that he has worked to reduce the number of traffic stops that the department is making by nearly 60% by the start of the year. Now, we've seen a pretty significant drop in murders at that same time, which I think will raise more questions about whether traffic stops are an effective law enforcement technique. And at the same time, there's a big debate over going on whether the city's consent decree should expand to include traffic stops. So that would give a federal judge authority over what that final policy would look like, although Anthony Driver and the CCPSA is likely to have some role in sort of figuring that all out. But this is another indication that traffic stops remain a very hot button issue. And Anthony Driver says that he believes he was pulled over because he's a large black man who wears his hair in dreadlocks, which raises real questions about CPD's ability to police constitutionally on Chicago's streets.
Of course. So, Amanda, there are also calls for how police respond to hate crimes. What are the details there?
Well, so this is a measure that passed the Senate, and you're going to have in the new year the legislature returning the last sort of bite at the apple before a new General Assembly is seated and they have to start over on all legislation. So a really diverse coalition, something that you don't necessarily always, you know, see. This is literally like leaders of major civil rights organizations, human rights organizations, the Chicago Urban League, an organization for sick individuals, for Latinos, all coming together to say that they believe something has to be done because there has been such a surge in hate crimes nationally, but as well as in Chicago and Illinois, and that police really need to be a better understanding of what constitutes a hate crime. If you don't have that, they say that you might be handling inappropriately that interaction with a potential victim and re-traumatizing them, or maybe you're not going to have something prosecuted as a hate crime, which carries a higher threshold of penalties because it is motivated by bias, by definition. And so they want there to be required training. Interestingly, this is something that the police standards board that governs what police need to be taught. Characteristically, they're like, all right, we've got enough. They're not opposed to this effort. So really, all eyes looking to January to see whether legislators get this over the finish line.
All right. So holiday parties, they happen, right? President Trump's border chief was the keynote speaker at a holiday gathering for the Northwest Side Republicans. Nick, what did he say?
That's right. As you mentioned, this is Tom Homan, who is the former acting head of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, now being tapped to be Trump's border czar, which is not necessarily an official position, but it certainly doesn't require Senate confirmation, for example, which we've all been hearing a lot about.
It sounds weighty. You're the czar.
It sounds very weighty.
Yes.
And, you know, this is a huge policy role, though, and clearly something that, the Trump fans campaign put a lot of effort in. He says Chicago should expect to be ground zero for deportations. Now, he, was walking a line a little bit where he said, we're going to be focusing on, criminals or alleged criminals to pick those folks up. But hey, if you're alongside those folks, you should expect to get picked up too. He also said that, the immigration issue here in Chicago is a problem because the mayor and the governor suck, the actual word he used. But he also, sort of implored them to come to the table and negotiate with him. We mentioned Senator Durbin mentioned the, planned use of the military for some of these deportations. Homan says, you shouldn't be expecting, tanks sweeping down the street, but he's not really backing off of the hardline image that they're projecting here. He says there's not necessarily a plan in place for family separations, which we saw in the first Trump administration, but there are no guarantees that something like that could well happen. So he had a pretty tough message, very much in line with what we heard during the election cycle. cycle.
Mayor Johnson and Governor Pritzker's reactions?
It's sort of what we've heard all along. We didn't get much of a reaction from either of them. A Pritzker spokesperson said, you know, Illinois is going to be under attack for a lot of things, and we're essentially not going to dignify everything with the response. But certainly from an Illinois politician there, Senator Durbin on the Judiciary Committee, trying to paint a pretty stark picture at that hearing earlier today, not just about the human impact of this, but also heard a lot of folks talk about what the economic impact might be, the problems with the labor market that might happen if undocumented immigrants are suddenly, you know, gone from the United States. So clearly this is something that people are going to be keeping their eye on very closely.
Heather, 30 seconds left. Mayor Johnson's senior advisor, Jason Lee, coming under scrutiny for having voted in Texas. Don't you have to live in Chicago?
You sure do have to live in Chicago to be a City of Chicago employee. And if you do not live in the City of Chicago, you are subject to termination. And I think there are a lot of questions about that right now. We asked Mayor Johnson about that yesterday. He sort of declined to give Jason Lee a full-throated, I have full confidence in him endorsement, but they're close allies. And it's not really clear if Jason Lee's problem is here in Chicago with his employment or if it's in Texas for voting in an election he said he wanted to because his sister is replacing his late mother in Congress. So I think that we aren't really sure how that is all going to work out. Inspector General Deborah Witzberg told me that she couldn't comment on whether she's investigating his residency. Her agency would be in charge of a probe like that.
Okay. I guess we'll learn more when we learn more, won't we? That Spotlight, Nick Blumberg. I know your name. Nick Blumberg. I do get paid to talk. Heather Girone, Amanda Vinicky. Thanks, gang. Up next, a new book explores the transformative reign of Chicago's longest-serving mayor. Stay with us. Richard M. Daley was first elected mayor of Chicago in 1989. It was a time of fractious, racially polarized politics at City Hall and violence that had one newspaper dubbing the city Beirut on the Lake. But despite the challenges, the younger Mayor Daley would go on to eclipse the record of his father, the original boss, Mayor Richard J. Daley, winning six consecutive terms as mayor. Forrest Claypool served twice as his chief of staff and had a unique perspective on his leadership. He's out now with a new book painting a behind-the-scenes portrait of Chicago's longest-serving mayor. The book is called The Daley Show, Inside the Transformative Reign of Chicago's Richard M. Daley. Joining us now is Forrest Claypool, former chief of staff to both Mayor Richard M. Daley and Mayor Rahm Emanuel. Claypool also served as the CEO of the Chicago Park District, the Chicago Transit Authority, and Chicago Public Schools, just to name a few. Forrest, welcome back to Chicago Tonight.
Thanks, Brandish, for having me.
Of course. So as we mentioned, you know, you've had some decades of public service. I know you, of course, from your time at CPS, but you've been quiet the last 7 years or so. Why did you want to write this book?
Mostly because I was upset at what was happening in the city in the intervening years. And I just thought that people had forgotten the lessons of good municipal governance, and people had forgotten what 1989 was like, as you just previewed, you know, violent endemic crime, you know, schools that were bankrupt and the worst dropout rate in the nation. Considered the worst schools in the country, according to the U.S. Department of Education, businesses leaving in droves, people leaving in droves, jobs declining, low quality of life, homelessness, and graffiti. And I began to see, you know, for 22 years, despite setbacks, despite calamities, despite scandals, Mayor Daley reformed the city, turned it around so that by 2010, Foreign Policy magazine said that Chicago was the sixth most important city in the world. And to sort of see this decline since then, where the schools are in chaos again, businesses and people are leaving in droves again, crime is endemic again, it was upsetting. So I thought the book was sort of a cathartic way to say history is important, we should learn from history, and there's lessons there.
So, of course, this your book, it looks at Richard M. Daley's reign. You, of course, had a ringside seat to that and participating in that. How would you assess the younger Mayor Daley's leadership skills?
Well, he had an extraordinary combination of political acumen and municipal management insights and urban planning vision. But he also had weaknesses, and you know he attracted great people, and that was important. When you have a vision and people believe that you can accomplish it, you attract high caliber people who accomplish great things. And there's several stories in the book where single individuals were responsible for changing history. One person was responsible for the land being acquired at Millennium Park, which everybody thought for 30, 40, 50 years was owned by the Illinois Central Railroad. One person blocked the Republicans from taking over O'Hare Airport, which would have been a shadow of itself today and a shadow of the economic impact on the city. But those people were working for him because they were attracted to that vision. They could have been making tons of money elsewhere. So he had great ability to attract good people. He let them run with the football. He didn't try to micromanage them, and had a vision to guide them.
I take it you're probably among those folks who were attracted to that vision.
Absolutely. You really wanted to go and work every day because you knew what he was trying to do to improve the city. Didn't always get it right. And as time went by, he actually, attracted less and less talented people, and it hurt him. And that was because of his own hubris. I mean, the book details some of the big scandals that came on later in his tenure that not only threatened his mayoralty, but threatened his freedom. You know, the former prosecutor had to hire a white-collar criminal defense attorney to represent him as the FBI questioned him about this corruption that oozed from every part of his administration. And it just sort of underscores the old adage that, power tends to corrupt and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And it's not a surprise that those scandals emerged when he was at the very height of his popularity and power.
You mentioned, sort of his weaknesses, his shortcomings. You detail in the book how he ignored and sought to bury evidence of police torture, both as Cook County State's attorney and then later as mayor. You write, quote, "Chicago's racial conflicts are a seemingly indelible stain on the city and a specter that haunted Richard M. Daley throughout his public career." How would you assess his record on race?
Well, that was certainly perhaps the biggest stain of all. But by the same token, as you pointed out in your intro, when he took office, it was a time of great racial conflict. The council wars were divided between black and white, a faction of white aldermen trying to block the first African-American mayor from succeeding. He came into office running on a platform of racial reconciliation, and he was true to his word, and it taught us that we can work together and unify the city. And when he left office, President Obama said, that he united the city in a way that probably no one else could have.
He also faced some financial challenges. Here is a clip of former Chicago Mayor Daley talking in 2010 about those.
And you have to bite the bullet. These are difficult decisions, and you have to make. And sometimes you have to cut things out. Sometimes you have to hold back on not spending. And you have to do these things if you want to balance a budget. If you keep borrowing money, just like foreclosure, you keep borrowing money, someone has to pay it back eventually. Who's going to pay it back? Is it going to be my child, my grandchild, or great-grandchild? And that's the big question everybody has to ask.
So critics say the root of some of Chicago's many financial problems today can be traced back to Mayor Daley. From the much maligned, there was the parking meter deal, overly generous public sector pay, and pension awards that have saddled the city with some massive pension debt. Do you think that's fair criticism?
I think that's half true. I think it's half reasonable. In the last 7 years of his administration alone, teacher salaries at CPS rose 50%, for example. He was obsessed with labor peace, and of course that's one reason the pensions have continued going. Although I would point out, as I do in the book, that the pension benefits are set by this General Assembly in Springfield, not by the mayor. And over a period of about 20 years, they increased pension benefits 1,000% in Chicago, even as the incomes of families went up 100%. So, more blame goes to Springfield than to the mayor on that front. I do think, though, that he also, the parking meters and some of those other things, bad deal, clearly. But it was at the very bottom of the Great Recession, when the economy was at its nadir, people are losing their homes, the joblessness was, and he was looking with the council to try to weather that storm without having to, you know, shut down the fire department or lay off police officers.
So you've worn many hats, as we mentioned, as a public servant, including being CEO of Chicago Public Schools, which you referenced briefly in your book, your departure from CPS as unfair. CPS Inspector General at the time accused you of lying to cover up an ethics investigation, and he recommended your termination. How do you look back on that time and your legacy as a public servant?
Sure. I think it's a good reflection, and I do address it in the epilogue of sort of the times we live in where there's kind of a tendency sometimes for special interests or politically ambitious people to operate in concert with reporters who sometimes exaggerate or create fake news that then takes on a life of its own, and that certainly was the case with me. But what I was accused of was allowing my general counsel to oversee his old law firm, even though that law firm was providing the services for free. So it technically violated an ethics ordinance that said that he shouldn't be able to oversee his old law firm since he was getting retirement benefits. But I think most people would understand that if a law firm is representing kids and giving up $1 million, which is what Jenner and Block did, they gave up $1 million in legal fees to help kids, that's hardly an ethics violation.
What would you say is next for Forrest Claypool? You've done a lot.
Well, nothing really. This book was, I hope, is an important contribution. I hope people read it and take lessons from it. I continue to occasionally drop an op-ed in.
As you did the Chicago Tribune recently about the pension
problem. So I care very deeply about what's happening in the city. I obviously have opinions based on experience, but I look to hopefully a new generation of leadership that comes along to fix some of these problems that we're experiencing today.
All right, that's where we'll have to leave it. Forrest Claypool, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Again, the book is called The Daily Show, Inside the Transformative Reign of Chicago's Richard M. Daley. You can read an excerpt on our website. And that is our show for this Tuesday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. The rise and fall of former Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. He joins us for an extensive one-on-one conversation. And the CTA Red Line Extension Project set to begin next year. Residents share their hopes and concerns. Now for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, wishing all a happy and healthy holiday season.